Today on Movie World, as we're going to review Ain't Them Body Saints, Drinking Buddies, and The Grandmaster. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Good evening, all.
Hello.
My microphone has cat hair on it.
We have cats.
I know, but I mean,
they do actually treat them like cheek rubbing posts.
They love rubbing their cheeks on these microphones.
Not while they're powered up, fortunately.
Yeah.
Kinky.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it was funny. I got home today.
So I'm not caressing my microphone. I'm actually picking cat hair off it.
Well, they're rubbing everything at the moment, because when I got home today, I found the neighbor's cat in the yard causing trouble between the two of them. So they're all a little bit territorial and possessive. So there's a lot of cheek rubbing activity going on. I think microphones are
good fodder.
Basically open fodder to be possessed and owned.
Yeah. Yeah, but I noticed Yazdi's is the hairiest one, probably.
It is. I noticed it earlier, but I can't quite see it. Oh, there, I see them, yes.
Yeah.
Our cat does have an affinity for Yazdi.
Yeah, she's sitting.
Even when he's not here.
Really near you. Yeah, even when he's not here, I found her in his place this morning.
Oh. I think I should be envious. It's like, what's going on there? All right.
Well, so I've been dying to speak about at least two of these movies.
Yeah, three movies that we're going to review. A couple of them we saw a long time ago. So, I don't know, where do you want to start?
Ain't Them Body Saints.
Ain't Them Body Saints.
Okay. So the tale of an outlaw who escapes from prison and sets out across the Texas hills to reunite with his wife and the daughter he has never met. This is directed by David Lowery, written by David Lowery, and stars Rooney Mara, Casey Affleck, Ben Foster, and Keith Carradine, amongst others. So we were lucky enough to catch this one at the LA Film Festival, and lucky to see the Q&A after the movie as well. So, I have to admit, unfortunately, normally when we say that we don't speak about movies, we're very honest, but because this was at a film festival, I guess all bets are off and we do talk a little bit about how we felt after the movie, because we're never sure if this will get a release or not. So I think I know how you both feel about this movie. So Yazdi, take it away.
Yeah, before you do, I should also mention that the director of the film was there, and Casey Affleck was there, and Rooney Mara was there as well, and they answered questions afterwards.
After big yawnings from Casey Affleck.
Yes, Casey Affleck seemed rather bored by his own movie.
Yeah, wasn't that
which
funny?
Explains my own reaction to the movie. If Casey Affleck himself was bored after watching the movie, what chance do we mere mortals have?
I know, that was bad. That was bad show on his part. If I was the producers, I would have been mad as hell.
Well, I think he was being hipsterish, but
I know he was. He was trying to be too cool for school, but he came across as dispassionate and disinterested.
And it was a late screening.
I don't care.
It was a late night screening. It was, yeah.
What he got paid to be in this movie, it could be a 2 a.m. screening. He's got to be full of beans. Anyway.
Yes, D.
Anyway, my response to this movie is, ain't this film pretentious? I mean, we've talked about this. I still don't get the movie. I really did not get this movie. I was watching it from, you know, minute to minute, and I just couldn't piece all, you know, I couldn't bring all the pieces together. It still remains kind of an unsolved puzzle in my mind. And we can talk about it more, but there is a particular rhythm to the movie, which usually, you know, I like that, but somehow it didn't work for me this time. So no, this movie didn't work for me.
Joe.
So, there's lots of talk about this movie. It's been incredibly well received. There's talk of Terrence Malick type talent by David Lowery here. And unfortunately, I just didn't see it. I won't say I hated the movie, but it has a very, very slow boil. It comes up eventually. You know, there's some excitement there. There are some very well shot scenes. In terms of how the visual composition. So it's a very interesting movie to look at. But ultimately, the plot kind of let me down. And the biggest issue I had with this movie, and I don't think we have spoken about this, but I wrote in my notes from LA Film Festival, and I'm thinking back, it's been a few weeks since we saw the movie, that the DP needs to be fired because the lighting in this movie sucks. Everything had this murky, dark look to it. And even kind of brightly, what should have been brightly lit scenes had this really soft touch to them. And to me, it's, you know, I understand it's a visual style, it's but
very deliberate.
It was annoying. I just wanted to see more of what was going on. So, you know, not a movie that I loved.
Rashmi has been very patiently silent.
That's right. Bursting
to chop our heads off. So off you go.
That's right. So remember, Joe, you spoke a few shows about, you know, a few shows ago about, you know, how you need films to be literal and they can't wash over you. I think this is one that needs to wash over you. And frankly, Yasdi, I'm really disappointed in you for not liking this one.
Maybe I was just sleepy. I don't know.
I don't know. For me, this was such a beautifully shot movie that just stole my heart. I still can't tell what time it's shot in. It feels old-time Americana, but I think it's supposed to be modern day. But I love this story because there isn't a bad guy. It just feels like it's about the lengths that people go to for love and the fact that you can't help who you fall in love with. But for me, it was mesmerizing to watch that play out.
I mean, everything you said makes sense as concepts, but I just didn't see that reflected in the movie. I mean, so it's supposed to be this very sweeping, moony, you know, love story between these two characters, but their behavior was so contrary to their supposed love for each other that I struggle with that.
Really?
Maybe I need to watch it again.
Yeah, I did, as you know, I tend to watch things quite literally, so that same problem that Yasdi's describing there is what I felt. I mean, I couldn't buy the lengths that they went to for each other, right? Because it didn't seem to add up in other behaviors that they exhibited. And
but love is unexplainable. That's the whole point of the movie. You know, it's unexplainable what you do because you absolutely adore someone and you cannot picture your life without them. And you are single-minded enough to pursue whatever you have to do to whatever length to get actions, back to this person.
But then your actions should make
demonstrate
sense.
That, yeah.
Right.
See, so to me, it made total sense.
So I could see that from the Casey Affleck's character's perspective, but I never saw that from Rooney Mara's character, who just came off as selfish and self-centered and really just all over the place. You know, I really had a problem with her character. I didn't warm up to her character at all. I never sympathized with her because she was doing things which didn't seem to be in line with somebody who has this epic love for someone else.
Yeah. That's how I felt.
I mean,
as well.
See, no, because I almost thought of her as this, like a tender little flower that needed caring for, and it was she was so fragile and clueless about the world. But the Casey Affleck character was all about looking after her and protecting her, and that was where, you know, the situation arises in a sense for me. And so I just saw it play out like she was the center of its his world, and really I saw it as his journey.
I can see the whole movie as being his journey, that I'll give you. And I absolutely 100% agree with you that this is one of the best evocations of Americana I've seen. Is it the Midwest? Is it the South?
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, but it's so distinctly American.
Yeah. You know,
and not just American, like hamburger American, but American in terms of, you know, the old West, and
you know,
so it kind of evokes that very well. That I'll grant you for sure. But it just is slow as molasses. I mean, maybe it was too late in the night. I do need to see this again.
But it had this incredible tension too. Didn't you guys feel that tension? I was worried for everyone in the movie because again,
that's the bit I was looking for desperately and not able to find. And I think, for me, it felt like it was trying so hard to do those things that all I could see was, you know, the effort.
Really?
Yeah.
So
I mean, just to finish that point, I mean, you can see that there's a lot of love put into this movie. You can see that it's been carefully crafted, and you can see what the director's going for, but I didn't feel any of it and any of that. And that, I think, was ultimately what disappointed me here, because I knew that there was this, you know, Casey Affleck's character and Rooney Mara's character. Casey Affleck is desperate to get back to her, right? He's escaped convict. He's desperate. He loves her like infinitely. And I can see that all there, but I never felt that depth of emotion, and I couldn't tell if it was a performance, if it was the direction, or what, but I never felt that emotion that you feel in those types of situations where somebody is so longing just to see their loved one.
See, and I was swept away by that. I mean, it melted my heart. I mean, it was just so tragic, and I think the tension for me came because, like I said at the beginning, there wasn't an out-and-out bad guy, and there wasn't an out-and-out good guy, and so I kind of felt for all of the characters, and so I didn't want anything to happen to any of them, and inevitably things are going to happen to some of them, otherwise it would be really boring. So I just got this sense of like, I don't want anyone to die. I don't want anything bad to happen to anyone. I just want love to love and love and gushy love, love, love. I just love.
Wow. Not the movie I saw.
Not the movie I saw either. And certainly not.
I was PMSing. I don't know.
Yeah. Either you need to see it again or I need to see it again. You know, Charles Frazier wrote this wonderful book, which was made into a very mediocre movie called Cold Mountain. And it had a very similar theme. It was about the soldier who goes off to war. And then,
With Renee Zellweger Nicole Kidman.
And Jude Law.
Is it a Clint Eastwood movie?
I don't think so. Yeah. But it's kind of the same thing where the soldier is kind of turning his back to war because he can't bear to be away from his loved one. And the whole movie kind of is his journey trying to return back to his wife. And that movie doesn't have this kind of poetic, moony sensibility that you know, Ain't Them Body Saint does. But I kind of felt more for those characters than I did. And I think part of it might have to do with the casting. I mean, I think independently, both Casey Affleck was so good in Gone Baby Gone, and Rooney Mara has been so good in so many movies. But I actually think both of them are miscast here because, you know, Casey Affleck is not able to, for me at least, very easily convey evil or very, very, very easily convey, you know, meanness of spirit. And there is a bit of that in that character, and he just comes off seeming like a puppy, you know, the whole time. So, he's supposed to be this, maybe I shouldn't give things away, but, you know, he's a robber, you know, he robs banks and he does things, and I could
never... Only because he wants to provide nice things for his wife. Yep. I mean, do you get what I'm saying? For me, that character played so well.
Yeah, but I wish they had picked an actor who had a little bit more of an edge to him than
Casey Affleck. I think it's intentional in the sense, and I wrote that down, he's adorable. And so again, it comes down to this, what do you do in a situation when there really aren't any bad guys and people are just doing the jobs they do or being who they are? So I thought it was great casting, and I love the edge that Rooney Mara brought, but it was a different Rooney Mara
that I actually liked.
You know, I liked that sense of...
I always liked her, though.
There was a little bit of an edge and a coldness, which I think played so well against that love, love, love that Casey Affleck had for her. And I just loved Ben Foster, who was such a handsome, manly man. Like, ben you know, Foster what do you do? Good. Yeah, like, he's such a manly man, and, you know, he's going to hold up the door when the house falls down.
Rooney Mara just seemed to me just selfish, you know.
Yeah,
I
think she was well cast.
Yeah, maybe she was. And I kept thinking, you know, why is this guy even bothering to follow this woman? Let her be, you know. But anyway,
okay, this is one that's going to need some input from our listeners. So yes. Yeah, yes. But other than that, let's wind this one up. So, Joe.
So I'm looking at my notes here from LA Film Festival.
And there are three lines.
Well, there's a few lines, but the last one has me intrigued, which says the whole film is a bit like the director's moustache. And I didn't know what that meant until I look here on RottenTomatoes.com and a picture of David Lowery, and he's got this great big caterpillar-style, right, old-fashioned Western moustache.
I nearly spat my drink out of my mouth when he said that.
On his clean-shaven head. And I know what it meant. It made sense to me. It's pretentious.
Yeah.
It's trying really hard to be this epic,
correct,
you know, sweeping drama, poetic. And again, the effort is all there to see, but you never, at least I didn't experience that in the moment. So ultimately the movie was a letdown, and I'm going to have to give it 5 out of 10. Sorry. Yes, my thing.
I really don't have anything more to add to what Joe said. I mean, that's why I started off saying, you know, this movie should have been called. I mean, just look at the title, Ain't Them Body Saints. It sounds so poetic. And I think, and it's a great effort. And I think he's actually a very skilled filmmaker. But I think, you know, you can see the gears a little too obviously.
Yes.
You know, it should have been a complete sleight of hand, and I should have been washed along with the story, and I was not washed along at all. So maybe it works for some, it doesn't work for me. And based on your reaction, I promise I will watch this movie again, just in case I was sleepy that day or when we watched it. It was like the fourth or fifth movie we saw that
day.
So I too would give it 5 out of 10.
Okay, for me, the things that didn't work for you both worked perfectly. The cinematography and the score impressed me the most about this film. I think this is a great epic romance. Joe, all the things that you said, it should have been, it worked. A great epic romance about good people that do bad things. If you love, love, go love this movie. I did. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Oh, I thought you'd liked it more than that.
Yeah, I thought you'd give it an 8.
No, I think 7's good.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the world seems to love this more than Yazdi and I.
Yeah.
It's running 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, and there's been a lot of buzz about this movie. I've read a number of terrific reviews of it and, you know, just come away a little puzzled. So, you know, maybe I do need to see it again, but it didn't work for me in the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're swept along with it, then it can be this really amazing, unusual experience.
It was unusual. It's not like a film that I've seen before. I mean, I've seen films like this before, but it was just lovely.
Yeah.
Okay.
I should also say,
I'm glad we didn't finish watching The Act of Killing after this one.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I just struggled, like, through the first hour of the movie, even trying to understand the movie. I just wasn't understanding what the relationships between the different, because it plays with chronology as well. It goes back and forth in time, and yeah.
Again, try too hard.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to, well, where should we go? Drinking Buddies or The Grandmaster?
Yes, do you choose?
Drinking Buddies.
Drinking Buddies it is. Who's introducing that?
That would be me. So Joan Swanberg can arguably be credited with pioneering the mumblecore genre of films, which are very small independent movies featuring insecure characters talking to each other. He can also be credited with giving the very well-known now Greta Gerwig her first break in cinema with films such as LOL, Hannah Takes the Stairs, and Nights and Weekends. Well, here is Joe Swanberg again in his latest movie, written and directed by him, called Drinking Buddies, which may actually be his most accessible film to date and also likely his most commercially successful. Drinking Buddies is set in the suddenly very hipster world of craft beer. It features four characters played by Olivia Wilde, Jake Johnson from TV's New Girl, Anna Kendrick, and Ron Livingston. Olivia Wilde and Jake Johnson work together in the manufacturing plant of a Chicago brewery. They hang out together a lot, both at and outside of work, which in itself would not be an issue, except that they both are in committed, serious relationships and not with each other. When do the lines get crossed between drinking buddies? And where is that line? That's the premise of the movie. And we all saw this film. And I know this movie got a huge reception at South by Southwest, where I know the both of you saw it. So I'm really curious to see what your reactions were to it.
Well, again, because we saw this movie at a film festival, we kind of broke one of the movie Rollers' rules, so I think Rashmi at least knows how I feel about this movie. And I think if not for the sublimely brilliant Before Midnight, this would have been my movie of the film festival for South by Southwest. I loved this movie from, like, the instant it began all the way through to the end credits. There is absolutely nothing that I would change about it. I think the performances, especially by Olivia Wilde, were just epically brilliant. And all the more impressive when you learn that this was improvised, almost entirely improvised dialogue. So just the performances of every character in this movie, it represented a great piece of 20-something, maybe early 30-something life lessons and dilemmas and, you know, conversations about, you know, marriage and what your life's going to be and making choices. And I just connected with this movie on every level, everywhere. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what an incredible alternative love story that isn't a love story, but is about love in a really non-smoochy kind of way. This is incredible acting by a very different Olivia Wilde that will ensure that she keeps getting work for years to come, I think. I really enjoyed this movie too.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the strength of the movie came towards the very end, and I purposefully don't want to talk about, you know, where the movie's headed, but I like that the movie kind of started out by being this kind of a very cool urban take on, you know, how we live now and how we connect. And then surprisingly towards the end, it made the most unexpected and rarely seen, but no less profound, you know, statement about relationships.
Yeah.
Which we very seldom see in movies. And I don't want to say too much again, but I was not prepared for that. And it really gained a lot of, you know, heft. By virtue of that.
Yeah, the whole setup of the movie is the kind of the will they, won't they, and mm-hmm. they play with that so beautifully mm-hmm. throughout the movie, again, messing with your expectations, setting up these situations for all of the characters, not just the two main characters, but also the partners of the two main characters. And again, I just think the movie just touched something very real about that part of your life where you're recognizing that, you know, there is something more that you have to, you know, you have to grow up, right? There's a point at which you mm-hmm. have to kind of grow up and acknowledge that your life isn't always going to be about, you know, fun and partying and whatever. And so, you know, those moments, especially Anna Kendrick's character, I think was really the more, at least on the face of it, the more evolved.
Yeah.
And not necessarily ultimately the most evolved in that way of thinking, but again, just the way that the movie addressed those issues was just so cleverly done and so unexpected.
I mean, for me, it was the fact that it had this real subtlety and it seemed to simmer to a boil.
It was a tension that was unbelievable.
There was so much tension and it was so well executed. I didn't know where it was going. I could not have predicted from scene to scene where we were going to go. And that's kind of representative of how relationships are at that point in your life. So I just love the way, and again, Joe, the credit for the improvised dialogue, you know, it could be so hammy. And I know there was a film last year that was that you both, I know, Joe, you liked it, about the two teenagers, the one who's supposed to go back to England.
Like crazy.
That was improvised. And I hated that dialogue because it was just so ridiculous. Yeah. But here, the improv really worked. And I love that the performances were very vanity-free. I mean, these are very raw, natural performances. I was blown away.
The chemistry, I think, was also
just blown away.
It was more than the performances. There was amazing chemistry, again, between the two leads, but also the two side characters.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we were talking about building tension. I mean, there is so much tension in this movie, and it's not tension from fear of life. It's just tension of, you know, crossing the line between what the world might perceive as right or wrong. And there is this great scene between, you know, Ron Livingston and Anna Kendrick's character when they go on a hike. And I couldn't breathe because I was like, oh, you know, so, and it's purely built out of, you know, where they are, where they're positioned in life and, you know, what they may or may not do. And it's very hard for movies to do that. So I give it credit.
At any point, somebody could get very badly hurt. It reminds me of that movie Closer.
Oh, yeah.
Where again, at any point, any of these characters could get really, truly, and deeply hurt. And you begin to care for them all so much that the prospect of that happening is something that we don't want to see.
Sorry,
you were going to say one more thing.
No, I was going to take us to another place, which is, you know, I don't normally geek out about cameras or technology, but given we got to hear about, you know, a bit more of the film with the Q&A, apparently this was shot by the same cameraman of that did Beasts of the Southern Wild, you know, which was one of my favorite films of last year. And apparently just one camera was used in the entire film.
Cameraman or DP?
Cameraman, apparently.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not the technical one. You should know this, Joe.
Well, big distinction.
Okay. So I'm going to say it wrong, whichever one. But anyway, it was someone who was associated with Beasts of the Southern Wild in an important role. But the thing that amazed me, this wasn't multi-camera. This is one camera in one place for a given scene. So that's interesting to me that you have to be very careful about what you're going to capture on movie if you've just got the advantage of one movie, one camera.
Yeah, I mean, I think
like
almost...
you haven't got that luxury of like bouncing between people's reactions and who's saying it and choosing which shot you're going to get. You kind of have what you have.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't notice the movie to be very technically proficient at all. And I think in a way, this very simple single camera kind of worked with the sensibility of the movie, which wasn't about dazzling you about with anything cinematic, but kind of more being invested with these characters. So this kind of spare feeling kind of worked to its advantage.
It's kind of like being in a room with people, right? You almost get that sense of, I'm actually watching something play out between people and I shouldn't really be here.
Yeah, I mean, so unlike you, you know, by the time I got around to seeing it, this movie had gotten so much buzz that I kept expecting, you know, greatness out of it. And I was kind of waiting, well, through the whole movie, you know, like, you know, and then ultimately, I think what convinced me about the greatness of this movie is that so much of it depends on the character played by Olivia Wilde, right? I mean, even though it's about these four characters, the movie is more about her than maybe any of the other characters. And I think this is the part that the movie deserves credit for, which is that this character is allowed to be so contradictory. You know, I mean, she's lovely, but she's also selfish. And, you know, she's fickle, but she's also endearing. And she does horrible, horrible things. And yet she means
she's
well.
She's stupid, yeah.
And she's stupid and she's flighty and, you know.
Flirty.
Exactly. And so, you know, in other words, like a real person. And, you know, very much like Lynn Shelton, who is a contemporary of Joe Swanberg, who made the grossly underrated movie from last year called My Sister's Sister.
Yes.
You know, both of those movies allows characters to be different things at different times, you know, and be like real people who are, you know, nobody is good all the time or bad all the time. You know, we are a mixture of complexities. And I think that whole Olivia Wilde character, and actually all of the other characters, brings that so beautifully on the screen. You seldom see that nuanced.
Yeah.
You know.
They're more than three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know these people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. We ready to stop gushing about this one?
And also, it was interesting to me that this movie is about... No, just one other comment. You know, there is a commentary here about... I mean, she's a functional alcoholic. There's no question about it. I mean, this movie seemed to be about people who seem to be drinking all the time.
I never acknowledged that. You're right.
I mean, she's drinking constantly. And
as is he.
As is he. And, you know... Of course, it's in the title of the movie, Drinking Buddies, but there is something about, you know, this character is not going to do so well once she gets older.
Right, but that's the thing. I mean, these are people that we know, and I think, you know, we know people who, you know, at that age were, alcohol was a huge part of their social life, you know, morning, noon, and night. I mean, every opportunity to drink and get drunk. And I wouldn't necessarily describe them as alcoholics, because it was partying, right? It was what you did at that age, or what some people saw as normal in that age. But you're right, it had repercussions later in life. And I think that's, again, that's one of the more poignant observations in the movie. You know, you kind of watch it, and it was kind of like The Spectacular Now, right? There's this character who is... You know, Fun Bobby. You know, I always talk about the Fun Bobby scene from Friends. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but it's about the guy that's like life of the party because he's always got a drink in his hand. And then, you know, they see him one day without a drink, and he's the most boring and dull person on the planet. You know, well, you know, this is about Fun Bobbies getting together.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. Yazdi.
I would definitely recommend this movie. More so because I kept waiting for some kind of emotional heft to come through, and I'd given up and thought it wouldn't, and then the end really brought it down for me. It's a very accomplished movie considering how small its ambitions are. It's quite something. 7.5 out of 10.
Which up or down?
Are you going to give it a shot of vodka, or are you going to say no thanks this time?
I'll give it, seems a little generous, but 8 out of 10, yes.
Joe?
Brilliant stuff. This floored me. I don't know why I'm not giving it a 10. I'm going to give it a 9, but it was so unexpected, and I loved every single moment of this movie, every frame. It was perfect for me. I couldn't recommend it more than that. 9 out of 10, easily.
take your best buddy to watch this movie. Hell, take everyone you know. You won't regret it. I'm going to give this a 9 out of 10 as well.
Wow.
Yeah, really, really like this movie. Just, again, different.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we did benefit in some regards to watching it at the film festival with a fanboy audience. But, I mean, I was blown away before the Q&A, you know, like... Well, as the credits rolled, I was literally speechless, and I found it hard to watch anything else objectively that day. I mean, it was
I think stunning. Olivia Wilde did a really amazing job of almost being an anti-hero in some ways. Mm-hmm. You don't often see a lot of women anti-heroes who you don't end up hating by the end of the movie, and I don't know whether we should feel sorry for this character, hate her, slap her, love her. It's just such a great... I think one of you said it, you know, it's like people that we know.
The look of the character is interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know? She's hot in a pair of dungarees, you know. Yeah. So again, those contradictions kind of...
She's scraggy, unkempt, but burps a lot, but she's still adorable.
But I like that there's never any concession to make her likable.
Yeah. You
know? And it's brave of her, and it's brave for whoever wrote that character, you know?
Yeah. So. I would love her to be nominated for this one, but I know it wouldn't happen, but how cool would it be for Olivia Wilde to be nominated?
Maybe for the Independent Film Awards.
She'll be on my list. I mean, you know, she might get a movie while a mug from me, at least, for best actress.
Olivia, send us your postal address. We'll mail you a movie.
We'll get you a movie. Yeah, we'll give you a mug.
Hold on, she's got to earn it. We don't just send out mugs.
Well, she's too earn it.
Yes, you weren't supposed to tell Joe.
Does she have to come to Joe's house and do a lap dance? I mean, how does she earn it?
Oh, she'll get more than the mug for that.
Okay.
Sorry, Rashmi. All right, on to our final movie of the week, The Grandmaster.
The Grandmaster. So that great filmmaker, Wong Kar-wai, of movies such as Chungking Express and In the Mood for Love, returns to the big screen, this time with an uncharacteristic large-scale biopic of Yip Kai Man, also known simply as Ip Man, the very real prominent name in Chinese martial arts, who is known for having trained martial arts legends, including Bruce Lee. Spanning a life from the 1890s to his death in 1972, Ip Man has been the topic of many films, including documentaries. Well, here is Wong Kar-wai's contribution to the legend of Ip Man, his life, his loves, and his struggles. Frequent collaborator Tony Leung plays the title character, and Ji Zhang, familiar to Western audiences from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, is also in this film. This movie is currently playing in cinemas, and I know we all saw it. Is there anything grand about The Grandmaster?
So on paper, this sounds like a perfect movie for me. Good martial arts, girl power, and mystical Chinese magic. But I don't know what I watched. I like the kung fu and all of the fight sequences, but I can't figure out what the story was. And I promise I didn't sleep once through all the subtitles. This is very stylish, however, and the first fight scene in the rain is breathtaking. I don't know how I feel about this movie. Confused.com.
Joseph.
You know, people are going to harp on all about the cinematography here, and while there was plenty of visual style, it was all completely wrong for an action movie. You had all these amazing facial close-ups that completely failed to display the elegance of the choreography. It was, you know, and again, when their faces as beautiful as Ji Zhang and Tony Leung, you know, these are very attractive people. One would think that these close-ups would do the movie justice, but instead I just wanted to kind of step backwards and see what was going on with the choreography. So that was one major irritation for me, and it was there from the outset. Next, the plot thread somehow got away from me, and I couldn't then connect the dots. Like, I followed it for the first third, like you, Rashmi, and then suddenly I literally lost the plot. I was like, what the hell? Where is this going? And after that, I kind of struggled, and I don't think I was alone in this. There was more than one walkout.
Yeah. I think I counted 8.
Yeah.
So Wong Kar-wai is one of my favorite filmmakers. And you know, he's a filmmaker of very specific gifts. I mean, he's a master of visual lyricism. I mean, from the very start, his films have always been very rich in style, but weak with plots. Mm. And every once in a while, he picks a theme for a movie where his very poetic visual style kind of complements the story. But this movie is not one of those. I mean, it's what the both of you have said, you know, already, that this, that while this movie is very, almost painfully beautiful to look at from scene to scene, it's all style all the time. And to the extent that you can actually see the clothesline for the plot on which the scenes seem to have been very haphazardly thrown together. I mean, there is, the structure of the movie actually is awkward. I mean,
so could you follow the plot?
No, it's inept. Okay. It's completely inept. Yeah. I mean, for a biopic, it's completely, I mean, I hate to use the word inept for so celebrated a filmmaker, but I was really struggling with understanding where things were going, and,
yeah,
and things like voiceovers, and there's actually written text which appears in the movie at different points. That's really lazy. I mean, nobody should have had make you read things in the middle of a movie at multiple points, you know, like 14 years later, you know, he moved to Hong Kong and his wife, you know, this happened and his job. Really? Have you so lost all cinematic, you know, artistry that you need like a text card to come and move the story forward?
Yeah. So,
you know, that really, I think, is unacceptable.
I think, to me, you said it, more style than content. It felt like we were watching a music video for most of the movie.
I wrote that down. I said it was like an extended version of the Smooth Criminal video.
Yeah.
You know, just lots of splashing water and style and choreography.
And the thing that really annoyed me, other than the close-ups, which you've already mentioned, Joe, was the film intentionally keeps slowing down when it didn't really need to. So you'd have this, whatever's happening, someone's making a cup of tea, and then it slows down. It was really odd.
It slows down because he's so in love with how the cup of tea is going to look, as you know, as the waft of steam comes off the rim of the cup.
I don't know, it was just so weird to me that at one point I thought maybe there's something wrong with the projector, but then it's not a projector, it's digital. But it was so weird. I don't know what to say.
I mean,
I got nothing of Ip Man.
Yeah, this is my problem.
Like, I don't know who he is. I haven't come out more educated. This is the guy who apparently trained Bruce Lee for his movies. I don't understand who the guy is.
Yeah, I think this is the movie's single biggest failing, and you nail it, is that it provides absolutely no pathology, you know, to the characters. I mean, Ip Man is already presented as a legend by the time you first see him. So, you know, what's the fun in that? I want to know how he became a legend. I wanted to know, you know, what made him tick? What made him drive to become, you know, better than anybody else? And it seemed like there were so many people around him who were masters in different techniques of martial arts, and yet he prevailed over all of them. But we are never told why or how or, you know, how he came to be. And then the other piece is that towards the end of the movie, you know, it tries to evoke this yearning ache of unrequited love, you know, and it almost completely directly draws from his own far superior, more sublime movie called In the Mood for Love, which is just, it's one of my, I can watch that movie on endless loop forever. But even in this comes too late, you know, where he's in love with this woman who is not his wife, but then, you know, they can't really be together. And it just seems like a cheap rehash of what he did so beautifully in that previous movie. So, yeah, it's very disappointing. I'm frankly shocked this movie got distribution. It's so bad, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that last bit of unrequited love, I mean, I don't know. I remember.
You don't remember?
I just didn't see it. I didn't see that. I was, like, scratching my head and just, you know, hoping that there was going to be an action scene that might come along and wake me up, because I couldn't piece it together.
I was
I started fidgeting, and you know, again, I don't think I was ready to walk out. I was just engaged enough, but it was really kind of a bore.
Yeah, and at that point, I was like, "Really, really? This is where we've come after 14 years and reading text, and you know." Anyway, I think this is ready to let's put this one to rest forever. Joe, I'm scared of your score.
Well, you know. It began well enough, but style over content is clearly the description I'm going to use here. I would say it was beautifully shot, other than the style didn't match the movie. You know, you can't do action movies with these big close-ups. You have to pan out. You have to let us see what's going on. We have to understand what's going on in 3D space, where people are, where the limbs are flying. You know, you can't just put a flying karate chop in the middle of the screen by showing a hand in the frame. It has to be somebody's entire physicality. So the whole movie annoyed me. And, I know everyone's going to say it's beautifully done, but that's really a subjective thing. You've got to see the action. So annoying in that regard. Horrible storytelling. Horrible, horrible, horrible storytelling. So 4 out of 10, really. And that's.
I think that's the first time you've ever used anything below 5.
Yeah, I don't like Rarely. To be mean. I like movies, but really clumsy, horrible, all done completely wrong.
Yazdi.
I mean, like I said at the start, I'm a huge fan of this filmmaker, but I mean, this particular movie seems to exist, you know, precisely to make the very curious point that there is some such thing as too much beauty. You know, I mean, this is a 100-minute film that felt about 3 hours long to me, and that's never a good sign. And it seems unusually cruel to take a filmmaker who is so poetic and fluid and so visual and try to kind of constrain him to tell a very linear biopic kind of a story. I don't even know why he was attracted to this material. He needs to make kind of, you know,
ethereal,
moony kind of movies. And I hope he corrects himself. This is a low point in his career, I think. I don't know why this movie was such a big hit in China. I don't know why Harvey Weinstein decided to distribute this movie. I give it 3 out of 10.
Oh.
Yeah, I think, yes, you just made the point I wrote down, which is maybe this film is just a little bit too ethnic for most of us to enjoy. It's not as engaging as something like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or even as beautiful as House of Flying Daggers. I think unless you're a diehard fan of Kung Fu, its styles, its history, this may actually send you to sleep. So instead of NyQuil, go watch Grandmaster if you want to sleep.
Score?
4 out of 10. And I'm giving it a generous 4 because I did like, there were just maybe 2 scenes of really good Kung Fu. The one in the rain took my breath away. It was just visually amazing to watch raindrops and the different angles of the
on his hat.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, I mean, that literally blew me away, but that was for like 3 minutes.
I suspect the original movie is a lot longer and a lot more lucid, and maybe they had to cut it down for Western audiences.
Maybe they mistranslated it.
Or maybe, yeah, I don't know if Weinstein messed it up by putting those placards with text in them. I don't know. To over-explain things, but it just came off looking really inept. Okay, anyway, we've beaten this one too much.
Nothing grand about this monster.
Yeah, really sad. Because you were excited to see this one,
I was
too.
So excited. I made us miss something else for this one, I think. Oh. There was probably a choice of 2, and I chose this one for us. I was so excited. Like I said, on paper, this is my perfect movie.
All right. Mail at movierollers.com. Let us know what you think. Twitter.com/movierollers and facebook.com/movierollers as well. Guess until our next episode. It's going to be too many movies, too little time. And good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.